session number 23338, reel 3.
Frank Sherriston, reel 3. Can you tell me what you did when you had shore leave from the George V?
Pause again. In Halifax, when we called in Halifax, we went into this, up this river, and into Halifax. And I couldn't understand what it was like, because we seemed to be going into dirty old railway yard. So we went in there, and all the railway engines and that alongside it were jetty rails. But when we went ashore, we walked out through this big shed sort of a place, out into the front, and you look back and you see it was a railway station. But I've never been into a railway station like that. But anyway, you walk from there up the hill, and you could walk all around all over the place. And it's quite interesting. It was frozen road, snow on the road, and the people were walking around towing little sledges, for their shopping, getting their shopping from the sledges. And I walked around there a bit and didn't do very much, and it was too cold to hang about there, so I went back to the ship. But we were allowed to allocate butter and sugar to our mothers at home, you see. So they stored on board a portion of sugar and butter for every rating on board the ship. And when we came back, we could send that home. Well, the stuff I sent home also included a tin of fat, beef fat, from the galley, which I had sealed up and sent home as well. So my mother had a tin of fat, some sugar and butter to help her rations. That was one thing that I did there. And then we came out of there and took a convoy over to England, about 40 ships it was. And by the time we got back to Scotland, we lost quite a few of them. And the escort was going to take them into Scotland, because we weren't allowed to go in near the shore, because there was any U-boats about. So they were late getting there. And what we had to leave the convoy. So by the time they picked the convoy up, the destroyers had picked the convoy up, they'd lost a few more of them. So I don't know how many they ended up with in the end. But I know oftentimes I was up on the deck, you could hear a bang and rumble and see flame going up from the convoy right across the other side, of the convoy, especially with ships that were lagging behind, who weren't able to keep up with the destroyer. We only had one destroyer and ourselves, and another submarine. I don't know where it'd be interested to anybody, but you know there was a submarine sunk off of Liverpool that had been built. There are lots of other men. Well, that submarine surfaced when we were near Halifax. I forget the name of what it was called then, but it was sunk off in Liverpool, and it lost nearly all the lives on board. It was in the papers, so that anybody wanted to look it up, they could find out all about this submarine that was sunk off in Liverpool. But she was repaired, and during the war, she was in service, and we surfaced and towed, and she broadcast over there, sent a signal over to the ship, and they put it on the notice board on the ship that if one of the officers on board there and recognized the silhouette of the KG-5, they would put a torpedo in it. So that was one of the incidents over there called the Halifax Stew. Houston, we went to Houston when the American Navy was there with their big ships, which were all sunk eventually at Hawaii. And we went on board there. It was the first ice cream they would had then at the time of the war, which already impressed us how well and these their ships were. And they were outdoed KG-5. Faster than each KG-5 than that mode boilers, an engine. It was supposed to make them better than what we were, but anyway, they were all sunk at Hawaii. So that was one instance there. And from there, we went up around Bear Island, where the commandos were in there destroying that place. Anyway, we escorted, they came back to Scapa Flow and had a bit of a rest. And from there we went down to off of Norway to for the commando ship. The commandos were ashore there to sink or destroy all the heavy water and stuff like the Germans were in that Norway. All the places. So it's now pause. See, the whole point is, I'm jumping from one place to another place now, because most of the stuff what you naturally know, we spoke about it. Yeah.
Can I just ask you?
So you'll have to prompt me now and yes. Say that, and I'll tell you about that a little bit. And then pause, all right?
How did you keep in contact with your family when you
didn't?
On the KG-5?
You never kept in contact, only by letter, which was censored. Everything that left the KG-5 was censored. So,
did you have no opportunity to see them during that year? Did you not go home?
I was on the KG-5, I went on once, I think. And it took me 36 hours to get to Weymouth. Yeah, by boat, from the Orkney Islands, over to Scraxter. From Scraxter, went to, down to Thurso, over to Thurso. From Thurso, down to, what's the name of the station? It's Glasgow. I know, to Glasgow station. From Glasgow down to, all the way down to, what's the name? That's the stations in London.
King's Cross, Houston?
King's Cross. Houston. For Houston to come south, I suppose. Anyway, one of those stations. From there, I had to catch a train then to, Weymouth, which stopped at all stations till we got to Weymouth. And from Weymouth, I sometimes could manage to get a lift home, and other times I had to walk. And one time I took a walk over the years of coming down, I took a post office van from Dorchester Station. I must have come on more times than what I said, but so yeah, my gosh, several times it from up the north I came down, that's right.
What was the reaction?
I'm wandering a bit now.
What was the reaction of your parents to you joining the Navy and to being?
Well, I saw this years ago. I told Dad, he said, what do you want to do? Because like I said, I could have no need to have gone, you see. And he said, do you want me to get you signed off from the door? I said, no, I want to go out. If my mates are all out, I just swear that. I said, because there won't be nothing on there for me. So I just volunteered then. And I always wanted to go in the Navy. If I could have... it's not quite so easy to get into things. Into things those days, you see. You know, everywhere you went was on bikes, you see. So I had to forfeit my chance of going into the Navy because you'd have to go up for a test, which I couldn't get to, you see. So, I don't know.
After you left the KG5, where did you go?
Back to Pompey Barracks. Well, I caught the Punjabi and I just cruised around for a bit because she was smashed up a bit, you know. And every time you woke up in the morning, you put your feet in cold water because she leaked so much, you see. It came through there. And we ran into several really terrific storms. So it took me a fair time to get from the Scapa Flow to, Oyston rather, I come from Oyston actually, then. That's where Oyston. And down to,
You said you were going, you went back to Portsmouth?
Yeah. I went to Portsmouth, come back to Portsmouth. And then turned over to a chippy.
What happened to you in Portsmouth?
Well, after we did a lot of jobs and ports of Pompey Barracks, not on the dockyard. I went down the dockyard, didn't know what it was like down there. And then I had this marvelous shipwright, right leg shipwright, and made friends of my mate and I, because he could only rely on us to make a good job of that. Oh dear.
So you looked after the maintenance of the barracks?
Barracks, yeah.
And how long?
Well, for a few months. And then I got a mate on there as I came back from the KT5, who was another chippy, and he had a drive ship to go to Canada. Pick up a boat, an answer boat, a bit boat into the transfer. But he never left Halifax. I never left there at all because the war ended by the time they finished the ship. See, but this answer boat went off the war with Germany had finished, but they were still over in Japan. See, and this boat, so they get this. Enter boat to ready for Japan, but my mate also. But all he did was the sign off in the morning and just walk around. The side of Canada. Naval base.
Vancouver?
Eh? Near Vancouver. Well, yeah, I think it was near Vancouver. anyway, he got the. But he used to wander around over. So I missed a good opportunity there, but he wanted to go home. And so I was more or less due to go home and return. So he wanted to change. So I said, well, that's fair enough. And yeah, I'll go. I'll take your money if you can get it changed by the draft check, you know. And he said, you want to enjoy it, and they wouldn't let him change. So, from there, I went up to a big place up near Manchester. Another naval place up there. What was the name of that place? That's where you play a lot of football. Oh,
This was your next draft after the Pompey barracks.
Yeah. Well, I came back from. I've been all on the Orange Duke before that. Yeah.
Oh, can you tell me about that?
Well, I had a draft ship to the Orange Duke, and attached to the Orange Duke. I was on maintenance on the Orange Duke, but most of what was there, the shipwrights and whatnot, were attached to a floating dock, which used to mount all the MLs, motor torpedo boats, and the midget submarines. And they had a floating dock there, which they used to mount all these MLs and motor torpedo boats and the submarines. And they used to work on them. But I was in never one. I was glad because it was so damn cold over there. I was pleased by that.
And the Iron Duke was in dry dock?
No, she was on in a cradle and underneath water. She's still in water because it was all flooded down below. I used to go down the engine room and paddle around there to get the teak off the engines. There.
So after the Iron Duke you went
back to Pompey.
And then to
first. I don't remember that. Is it in here? It should be. My glasses. I can't find me.
It's just
a stiff neck, you see.
I'll have a look. Wrong one.
It's in the other one, is it?
It's not it here.
Oh dear.
Oh, it's just by the side of you, isn't it?
Fine.
Oh, doesn't actually say it was the Iron Duke.
Yeah.
From the 16th.
Yeah, what's inside? There's some inside, isn't there?
Not
there. God, wasn't it that place? I'll tell you what used to be there.
It's got
all fleet iron. You used to have all the navals who were fleet iron personnel. And they had about 5,000 in that camp alone. And there were 5 camps up there, all with ratings, different ratings on, up around Manchester. God, what's that name? I thought I'd got my glasses. Where are my glasses here somewhere? I'm getting ancient, you know.
Oh, they're just on the chair. You were sitting on them.
Oh, there's the other one. God, what's the name of that place? Garson. HMS Garden. Is it? Yeah, that's where it was, HMS Garden.
And how long were you at that camp?
Well, about 6 months or more.
Or were you working as a joiner there?
Yeah, working as a joiner there. Well, a petty officer joiner, they call it. First class. Petty officer.
So you become a petty officer by then?
Oh, yeah, when I turned over. You turn over to a leading man, which gave you the privilege of an up and to walk, run across the playground. So you could walk across it. It sounds silly, but it's true. So, anyway, I was leading man for a while, and then I went turned over to a petty officer, first class ship, well, not shipwright, joiner. They ain't got no joiners in the Navy, they was all shipwrights. Getting disgruntled now and everything. Going to sort of my past. And within the members sorted it all out. That's right, HMS Garton. This was a 3-tower training base. One of them. There was 5 up there. And these bases were to house all the people that might got bombed out from Manchester and up there in that area. And they built all these big places to house all the people. Anyway, they turned them into the Fleet Air Arm bases then, for raising through the Fleet Air Arm. And we used to do all the maintenance of these camps, which was a nice job.
What happened to you after that?
I was demobbed from that there.
Tell me about the demob process. How did you come to be demobbed?
Well, you're on a list, aren't you, really? Some went out before you. All depends on the length of service you had then, I think. And I don't know how far down I was, but you went to these, you could come back to London then, to these where they issued you with all your city suits and whatnot.
Tell me about that.
Oh, well. You had to go in and leave your places and all these. Those handing you out suits if you were in your try on a jacket and hope the try was fitting. And it's like. That was a palaver. And anyway, right, you didn't have to hand your, you know, you just take it on with you, you know, because you kept your naval suit with you. See, so I came out with that. But you see, I was there. I was on the neat rum then, so you'll get it ring. I'll tell you a instance about that. Now, I used to bottle my rum. You weren't allowed to, you're breaking the law, naval law, you see. I used to bottle all my rum. Now, I didn't like washing and ironing it. But there was a mess deck, the chief's mess deckman, you know, one looked after him. Anyway, he'd do anything for a drop of rum. All my shirt and my clothes and everything washed and ironed, and by God, he could iron as well as any woman. You could, and I had all my colours, because they're all separate colours and things, and one attached to the shirts. And I used to have all that done. Everything I wanted washed, he'd wash for me for a top of rent.
Even though you were shore based, did you still get your tots?
Yeah. But it was meters then, you know, for all sorts of stuff. And I used to have that and buckle it. Because I could buy a battleship. Don't put that in there. They wouldn't like it. But you know, supposing what you could do with some of your rum addicts, you know. And
Did you trade your rum for any other?
If I wanted some extra pants or vests and shoes, nice naval slippers. What do you call them? Naval slippers. They're like a pair of shoes, lovely, lovely soft leather shoes. And I got a few of those. And I also, you know, the Burberrys, like naval. You don't know the naval Burberrys? They're lovely Burberry coats. And I used to have a few of those, bring them on, get down one or two. And, well, odds and ends. shouldn't have that early in there.
What happened to you after you were demobbed?
I went back to work for me, with my father. Although my father then, he was a very sick man. He had 2 strokes by that time. So that's one of the reasons I came back, otherwise I should have stayed on in the Navy. Because I could have gone up the ladder, but you know, I had all the recommends and to be able to go on. So I came back, thought I did that, because they come back and help me, mother and father, which I think it was only natural. I think I should do. I couldn't go on very well. I said, well, you look after yourself. And I came back and thought I got into their work again. And then I thought myself, well, I didn't get much money here, so I knew this place was going up in UW Portland, which is a brand new place. And then I thought, having football mates again. I got a bit of leverage, and I got this place up at the what was it called then? Memory's getting to the brain now. Naval AUW it was called at that time.
What does that mean?
Underwater Weapons Establishment, experimental establishment. And that's what we did, all experimental stuff. Well, at that place, I tell you what I did do. I got in charge of all the fiberglass molds and things like that. Maybe it's not about fiberglass. Also, I used to do all the mixing for fiberglass, because in those days, there wasn't much known about it. The only people who knew about fiberglass around here, and nowhere else in the Navy, was the Tots, the boat builders in the ferry bridge. And they were one of the first lot of people who used to make fiberglass boats and motorboats. Didn't you know that, did you? Well, they did. They were. Anyway, the Navy wanted to get into the fiberglass, but they used to make domes on the front of the submarines, which for the Aztec gear and all that. And so, anyway, I used to make most for the army, gun sorts and gun sorts what, which I had to make a pattern of mold, which in fiberglass work backwards. You don't work start from the beginning, you work from the end product, you see. And you had, so you had to make a mold, so it would all come apart, visually come apart. I should never get this fiberglass out, see. And so that's what I ended up doing, more or less. And I left there. Then they started slowing down on mock-ups and all that sort of stuff. And I went on two or three lots of mock-ups up there, because that's what they did. But they started slowing down, and I landed up making little posh boxes for putting all sorts of gear in, you know. Really posh stuff, anyway. Really nice boxes. But I thought myself, that's it, I had enough. I didn't want to be come back to where I started as a practice boy. So that finished that, I left up there. From there on, I went off with my daughter. We were at boarding kennels. We had boarding kennels out the road out there. And we used to board dogs. She was a good handler of dogs, my daughter.
Is that what you did until you retired?
And I left there, and we went up the top, up the hill, and I retired up there, more or less, you know. I was never retired, really. So all that new on the side of the air is all new, you see. We put that on since it's been here. She was 2 years older than me. All she had was a laugh ladder going up through there, holding the spring to get up the tub here. Yeah. So we had all that to do.
Did you miss Mabel life, or did you find it difficult to adjust?
I did miss it. I liked it. To be quite honest, I couldn't understand why people wanted to get out of it, to me. So I liked it. I enjoyed it. To be quite honest, I enjoyed it. To me, it was living. Perhaps I'm just pointing in the air.
Anyway, thank you very much.